This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
The Informer Daily is recorded on the lands of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. At Joy 94.9, we'd like to pay our ongoing respects to elders past, present, and emerging. The Informer is funded in part by the Community Broadcasting Foundation, cbf.com.au, and of course, the members and donors of Joy 94.9.
This is the Informer Daily for Wednesday, the 3rd of June, 2020. I'm your host, Arian Potts. Tonight, protests in the United States over the death of George Floyd at the hands of Minneapolis, Minnesota police officers have been continuing into their eighth night. There's a huge amount of anger, lots of confusion, and it doesn't seem like there's any end in sight. We talked to Lowell Goshu, a communications consultant who's worked extensively in the fields of political activism, communication, and social justice, about what's happening and what can happen in the future. But first, this update.
This is Dee Mason with the Joy 94.9 COVID-19 update for Wednesday, the 3rd of June. Prominent economists are urging the Australian government to partner with Asian countries to salvage the world economy. The strategy calls for members of the ASEAN nations to coordinate financial, trade, public health and food security policies to aid recovery post-pandemic. Adam Triggs, who co-authored the plan, says as Asia was impacted first, they will come out of the crisis first, so there's an opportunity for them to lead global recovery. There has been a 200% increase in reports made to the eSafety Commissioner over image-based sexual abuse since the beginning of the COVID-19 pandemic. The increase is thought to be due to an increased reliance on digital technology for intimacy, combined with the resurgence of a sextortion scam. The scam comes in the form of an email claiming to have access to intimate pictures and threatening to release them unless a ransom is paid in cryptocurrency. The federal government is planning to introduce new legislation which will provide further protections for adults who experience cyber abuse. An exemption to the international travel ban allowing the live export of sheep out of Perth has been revoked in the aftermath of the Al-Kuwait COVID-19 outbreak. The docking of the ship caused a political row between Western Australian Premier Mark McGowan and Federal Agriculture Minister David Littleproud after the Premier claimed he was not informed of crew members being sick. Revoking the exemption has left the fate of 56,000 sheep in limbo as they remain stuck in the South Perth suburb of Baldivis. The UK Medical Journal that published a study claiming hydroxychloroquine has been linked to deaths in COVID-19 patients is now voicing concerns over the data. The study, which observed 96,000 hospitalised patients who are being treated with the antimalarial drug, caused several clinical trials to be put on hold after its publication. Given this study was not designed like a traditional medical study and did not use a placebo, doctors and medical scientists are now calling on the journal to publish the peer reviews so the validity of the data can be examined. A new poll from ABC News and The Washington Post has shown that unpersuaded by more than 100,000 pandemic deaths in the US, 45% of strong conservatives, 4 in 10 Republicans, and nearly as many evangelical Christians say they would be unlikely to get vaccinated against the coronavirus, even for free. Overall, 27% of adults in the poll say they definitely or probably would not get the vaccine. Among the group, half of them say they don't trust vaccines in general, while nearly a quarter don't think it is needed in this case. 81% of Democrats and 71% of people polled overall say they would get the vaccine when it is available. Rome's streets have been filled with anti-government protesters, many of whom are flouting social distancing rules and not wearing masks. The protests were organised by right-wing political parties League, Brothers of Italy and Italy Go as a criticism of the current coalition government and Prime Minister Giuseppe Conte. With over 233,000 confirmed cases, Italy is one of the countries most impacted by COVID-19. Despite this, League leader Matteo Salvini wore his mask around his neck as he took photos with supporters, saying the virus is dying.
This is the Informer Daily on Joy 94.9 and across Australia on the Community Radio Network. Protests in the United States are going up to their eighth day in some cities over the death of George Floyd, who was arrested by Minneapolis police officers, one of whom placed his knee on George Floyd's neck for nearly 9 minutes, of which almost 3 minutes toward the end, he was not showing a pulse. With protests spreading all across the country and in cities large and small, it's revealed a deep level of anger and distrust between minority communities and the many, many police departments in the United States. Trying to figure out where some of the anger came from, I spoke with Lowell Guashu, who is a communications consultant who's worked extensively in social justice and political campaigns. Why are people so angry? Why are these protests happening?
Well, I think there's like a virus that's going around. You know, everyone likes to talk about COVID-19, but there's a virus going around called institutional racism. And pretty much the thing that kind of tied everyone together was a white cop was assassinated by a white cop pretty much assassinated a black man on the street in broad daylight in front of a crowd on camera for 9 minutes with three cops being accomplices. And he pretty much walked away and went home that night. And pretty much as a black man, if the situation was reversed, I wouldn't be able to leave the scene of the crime. Yeah. My life would be over forever if I made it out alive that night. So, you know, it's kind of like, you know, I realize that every country is not perfect, especially America. But, you know, there's a rapper called Killer Mike. You know, he's pretty much saying, you know, as a result of this situation, that's really important that you don't burn your house down, you know, with the riots and stuff. And what's going on is he feels like the cause is being lost that with through the riots. You know, he's saying we should like let's burn down systematic racism, but not burn down, you know, buildings. And that's something we could talk about later. But anyway, I feel like this whole situation of 9 minutes watching a cop put a knee to the neck of George Floyd was kind of like the equivalent of America's knee suffocating Black America. You know, we're like Black Americans have been following the rules and we're screaming for our lives, saying we can't breathe. You know, that's like a, you know, I can't breathe was literally what the George Floyd was saying for 9 minutes. And we've reached like really critical milestones that have kind of reached a tipping point. You know, we passed 100,000 deaths, 40 million people are on unemployment, and essential workers who are risking their lives to provide everything from groceries to manicures are disproportionately poor Black people. We're serving middle to upper class white people. And, you know, just to give you an idea of the wealth gap that's going on in America, white families here have assets of $171,000 that are 10 times more than a Black family that makes $17,000. You know, so that's like 10 times the difference. So you have like this wealth inequality, you have health inequality, you have unemployment inequality, and, you know, this, you know, people are more at risk for coronavirus and are dying disproportionately. And all these factors are are happening. And then you have this 9 minutes of footage of a cop literally not giving a crap about a Black man dying. And we had enough. And what made it interesting was that Trump was kind of COVID-19 tipping point, I guess, the virus tipping point. Because I kind of view Trump, you know, he's a racist and he's been a racist for, you know, throughout his presidency. And we just don't trust Trump as like Black people. And he has like a low approval rating. I think he's like at 3% among Black people. And, you know, and he's kind of like this virus, and he's like a multiplier of this virus of white supremacy ever since Charlottesville.
What happened in Charlottesville briefly?
In Charlottesville, there was a pretty much white supremacists decided to gather and take back our country rally. Literally, white supremacists felt confident to gather white men. And we didn't have a lot of time to organize the other side. And so it was a spur of the moment. So Friday night, white supremacists decided, as opposed to having, you know, KKK outfits with white robes, they decided to wear t-shirts and pants and just walk down the street with their holding torches. And it was just really scary, and people didn't have much time to organize. And the left and the and pretty much the two sides confronted each other, and there was violence. And Trump said that there are good people on both sides, and that was really scary. So apparently, they're good Nazis. That's what Trump believes. Mm. And from that day, you pretty much knew. He was not an ally to black people. So there, we kind of got this feeling that there was no form of black protest that Trump would sanction. And it was pretty much what made the situation in Minneapolis so interesting was that the cop that was accused of the crime got to walk away, and he wasn't charged for a few days. And there were growing and growing protests because of the injustice of that, despite the obvious, you know, it was obviously on camera what he did. And
more than one camera as well.
Yes, and there were bystanders there. There were hundreds, you know, there was a lot of witnesses. Mm. It was a
people crowd. Even calling 911 to get the police to come to take care of the police.
Correct. And what was interesting was the autopsy. They were trying to say that their homicide was the cause, but they were trying to provide underlying conditions saying that he had hypertension and he had like other issues that contributed to his death, you know, as opposed to him not breathing as a primary cause of his death, which is like BS way for the defense team to say, oh, he died from other causes, not homicide, you know, which is, you know, shows how tainted the Minneapolis department is. They can't conduct an honest investigation of what's going on.
And we'll have more with Lowell Goshu in a moment. This is The Informer Daily on Joy 94.9 and across Australia on the Community Radio Network. Welcome back. We're continuing our conversation with Lowell Goshu, and I began by asking him about some of the constitutional protections that Americans have under the First Amendment and protesting. Americans have a Bill of Rights. It's 10 amendments, and it covers, you know, the Second Amendment everyone hears about the right to bear arms, and, you know, there are other ones about the Fifth Amendment, where you have the right to not incriminate yourself, and like you don't have to keep the cops, like you don't have to shelter soldiers in your house without wanting to, which was one of the grievances of the American Revolution. But the First Amendment is, I think, one of the most powerful, and it's got those four components. It's the freedom of speech, it's the freedom of religion, it's the freedom of press, and crucially, the freedom to peaceably assemble. And that's what we were seeing in Washington, D.C. About 24 hours ago. There was a very calm, well, it was an angry crowd that was standing behind barricades. Nothing was being thrown at the police in Washington, D.C. off of Lafayette Square. And then William Barr, the attorney general, showed up in the background of the shot. And then a few minutes later, the police charged and actually went, you know, charged these protesters who weren't throwing things. They were just standing in the streets being angry, which in theory they have the right to do. And then the president gave a press conference with the sounds of tear gas canisters exploding in the background and held a photo op with a Bible in front of a church where the protesters had been mere minutes later. And the hypocrisy of that moment was stunning, that Donald Trump, of all people, holding up a Bible at a church where people had just been cleared out and they were peaceably assembling. They were inconvenient, but it was just a galling moment.
And it's we're so speechless for that, because one of the ironic things was the Bible was also held upside down, and it wasn't even his personal Bible. It was just a prop that was used. It was a prop that was used just for a moment in time and just to reach out to his base. It's a campaign moment, and he just wanted to show dominance, to show that he's a law and order president, which is obviously coded language to show that he wants control over the situation. And I want you to know that one of the things that activated the protest, one of the points I want to drive to you that turned it from a Minnesota protest to a nationwide protest, mm-hmm. was when he said, when the looting starts, the shooting starts. So that's coded language for segregationists from a Miami police chief used that to attack protesters in the 1960s, who were civil rights protesters, who were peaceful protesters, and he would use dogs on peaceful protesters. It was a justification to attack peaceful protesters, and so he's using that coded language, and literally that coded language was told every person of color and told every protester who wanted justice that they could be shot on the president's orders. And that's when all hell broke loose. And that's why you see the level of rioting all over the country. Mm. And he literally put gasoline on the fire. And that's when it became a nationwide issue. I believe that tweet made it a nationwide issue. I mean, it was pretty bad before, but to me, that was seriously the tipping point. And this Bible, he literally, right before he decided to walk across the street and have that photo op with the Bible, he said that he's gonna bring the military into a peaceful protest, rally, peaceful protesters. And the irony was, before, there were white protesters who were complaining about reopening the economy so that they can get a haircut and get their nails done. And they were having AR-15 rifles at the state capitol and spitting on cops. And the cops did nothing. But with this, with peaceful protesters, they're doing tear gas. And, and it's just kind of like, the hypocrisy with white protesters, they're not doing anything to them. With black people peacefully assembling, they're doing something. They're doing this level of violence. And so it just blows my mind that the military presence is so outrageous. It just shows the hypocrisy and the ridiculous use of force when dealing with two different populations of people.
And we're not really. Are there people with rifles or other handguns, firearms at the protests that are happening now? Is that something that we're seeing?
No. The it's interesting to. There's video evidence of cops actually planting bricks in certain cities. They're creating fake construction sites so that rioters can grab these bricks so that they can create these scenes of violence. It's kind of a weird thing, so that Trump can invoke these military rule and martial law. It's really crazy, and I don't know why they want this, but they do. They just kind of want to delegitimize the peaceful protesters to bring attention to the actual movement, which is let's get justice for Floyd. The reality is that we've had 4 African-American deaths by white people who use the cover of law enforcement to kill people. And so this is a trend that's happened this year. This is a trend that's happened over many years, and the police want to change the subject. Trump wants to change the subject from his failures from coronavirus into looking at how tough he is as a law and order president. And so it's horrible. And so anything to change the topic from coronavirus, anything to change the topic from cops, look at these horrible black people, fear, is just a hot topic. And I'm sorry about, you know, on behalf of Americans, obviously Trump does not speak for us. The cops don't speak for us, you know, literally. And I'm sure there's many cops in the force that don't want to, you know, do these orders, but they have to, you know, they're getting a paycheck. And so they're doing this, yeah. You know.
What about looting? It's something that's been seen in protests a number of times. And one of the more sort of famous cases, and there's a really good documentary about it, was when there was a blackout in New York City in, I think, 1974. And there'd mm-hmm. been a blackout 12, 15 years before that, and it had been really peaceful then. But on that occasion, it turned into quite a bit of violent rioting and looting in New York. And we're seeing some scenes of that happening now. What drives that?
What drives looting? You know, MLK say, like, writing is a language of the unheard. And I feel that the police have abused their authority. And I can't speak for the rioters, but I feel that when you have been abused, mm-hmm. sometimes you fight back. And I feel that a lot of people, when they pay attention to the looters, they're losing sight of the message. The message, you should be focused on the injustices that are going on. Mm. And unfortunately, we lose sight of the fact that the origin of the violence is the fact that there's been 400 years of systematic racism that's been going on, discrimination, slavery. We've learned violence from white people. We've learned violence from, like, white people taking the land from Native Americans, white people doing slavery, white people, it's just this opportunity to fight back and communicate that I don't want to die. I want to breathe. I want to live my life. I have followed the rules. And it's not that we want to be violent. It is that we don't know how to communicate that we want to be treated as equal human beings, because we are tired of trying to communicate peacefully and not being heard. And we're demanding it now. Listen to us. Mm. And sometimes I think that when people are not being heard, they will get your attention any way necessary. And this is a method, and it is grabbing your attention, which is interesting, because other methods have not grabbed your attention. You know, like, there's been I've done Black Lives Matter protests for years, and, you know, it hasn't made international headlines, but now it's made international headlines, you know, because I'm here sitting here talking to you. Mm. I remember, like, maybe a couple of years ago, we were on the highway trying to raise awareness about, close down the highway. It wasn't me closing on the highway, but I was nearby. In Atlanta, and, you know, and these tactics are happening right now, closing down the highways, and it's annoying people, but it's happening. And so it's just funny. Now it's annoying, but it's as if it just started, like, out of the blue, but these tactics have been happening for years, you know? Mm-hmm. So I just find it so interesting that, you know, to Trump, it's like as if these tactics just happened, like, from nowhere. But these organizations have been around for years. Mm-hmm. And from Ferguson, there's been, you know, there were small efforts, and now these groups are all over the country right now. And I think the hardest thing that Trump has to realize is he can use military force. He can try to shut them down, but they're going to be around for a while. This is not going to go away. Mm. And that's what's kind of hard for them to understand. They can try to weed it out like they did with Occupy Wall Street. I mean, this is kind of like Occupy Wall Street, I would say. View it like that. View it kind of like the Arab Revolution, or kind of like, you know, how when people fought apartheid. It's kind of like those type of movements. And they don't really view it like that, but it is kind of like that.
And that was Lowell Goshu, a communications consultant based in the United States. That's all for us today. I'd like to thank Nicholas Kamenyar-Sandry, Emily Johnson, Jordan Johnstone, Dee Mason, Rachel Tyler-Jones, and all the folks at the Community Radio Network for their production help and assistance. I'm your host and executive producer, Arian Potts, and we will be back tomorrow. Mahalo.
I was born by the river in a little tent. Oh, and just like the river, I've been running ever since. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will. It's been too hard living, but I'm afraid to die. 'Cause I don't know what's up there beyond the sky. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will. I go to the movie and I go downtown. Somebody keep telling me don't hang around. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will. Then I go to my brother.
The Informer is funded in part by the Community Broadcasting Foundation, cbf.com.au. And of course, the members and donors of Joy 94.9. You can help us by visiting joy.org.au and become a member or donate. Any amount helps us bring you community-powered radio. Thank you.
Oh, there have been times that I thought I could last for long. But now I think I'm able to carry on. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.